Becoming a well-rounded person in our modern society is no easy task, never mind finding your true purpose in the process. Thus, at School of Human Potential Radio, we invite world-renowned experts for a discussion on how to achieve both and lead a healthy, wealthy, and fulfilling life. Topics are all over the mind, body, and spirit spectrum, and guests range from Lisa Williams to Yakov Smirnoff and everyone in between. Listen live, call in, and allow us to help you reach your full potential. Here's your host, Alan Vaisberg.
Good morning, everybody, or at least it's still morning in Chicagoland, which is very snowy today and yesterday. It is extremely beautiful outside, and as I look outside and see the beauty of the snow, it reminds me of love. And that is the topic of today. We're going to be actually speaking in about 10 minutes from now. We'll be speaking with America's number one love and marriage experts, Dr. Charles Schmitz and Dr. Elizabeth Schmitz. We will ask them all sorts of questions because what they have done is they have interviewed people all over the world on all seven continents, asking them questions about their love and their marriage. They've written books, they've done seminars, they've been all over the place. I look forward to speaking with them and asking them about their quiz. I actually took their love quiz online. I feel pretty good about the results, but we'll ask them later. So love and marriage, what is it all about? On School of Human Potential, we try to invite world-renowned experts and ask them questions about different areas of life, anything that spans the mind, body, and spirit category, anything that will allow us to become more well-rounded and better prepared to live a comfortable, interesting, and fulfilling life. So we spoke on a number of our last shows, actually. We spoke to Gary Chapman, the author of The Five Love Languages, and his book really helped my marriage at the very beginning we read it. So we spoke to him and we asked questions about love and relationships and got interesting answers. We last week had a chance to speak with Kim Seltzer, an image and dating expert, and we asked her lots of questions about dating and coming back into dating world if you have been married and now are newly single. And now we get a chance to continue that discussion with the Dr. Schmitz or Drs. Schmitz. But before we begin, I wanted to talk about my own experiences. I've been married for 14 years, knock on wood. I've been extremely happy. I love my wife. I'm not just saying that because she may have been listening to the show or may be listening to the show later on. By the way, this is a live taping, so please call in. We have our phone numbers of 1-888, this is to call in, 429-5471. There are five lines available right now, so 888-429-5471. If you call in, you get a chance to talk to me, or you get a chance to talk to Dr. Charles or Elizabeth Schmitz. Okay, so I've been married for 14 years, and when we're talking about love and marriage, and my discussions with my friends who have been married, some friends are married again, they've gotten divorced and remarried. We have discussions just like you would have with your friends of what works, what doesn't. Everything obviously really depends on the people, and the way that they're running things. One of my best friends, his marriage is very different from my marriage, and both seem to work. So what is that common theme? And common theme, these are the questions that we're going to be asking the doctors. But from my experience, and we talked about this on the last show with Kim, there are two of the secrets that work for me. One of the secrets was, again, the five love languages. It really helped us out, realizing that my wife and I are speaking different love languages, which is not a bad thing. That's just that's how it is thing. We both grow up in certain ways. We both have ideas on what love means to us. And whereas I am the lovey-dovey, huggy guy that wants to tell my wife how beautiful she is and wants to make sure that I have these words of affirmation or touching or spending quality time, these are my love languages. For her, it's more of, well, I am doing things around the house. Are you helping me out or not? Are you helping me out with the children? What are you doing in order to make my love easier? Don't tell me you love me. Show me you love me by doing these things. So our definitions are different. And by reading that book at the beginning of our marriage, that really helped us out because it allowed us to look at each other from that other person's perspective. And then we tried to bring it closer to the middle. My wife became a little bit more huggy and touchy, if you will. And I became much more focused on doing things around the house. Now, mind you, my wife probably doesn't love doing that. And I certainly don't love doing things around the house or people tell me what to do. That being said, that's marriage. Marriage is about making things work. It's not just about falling in love and being in that beautiful euphoric state, because that euphoric state goes away. Because you are two different people. And even though you have many things in common, you are two different people with your backgrounds, with your understandings, with your belief systems. You have many more things in common. And what you're supposed to be doing is working together. Love is work. Marriage is work. I certainly experienced that the last 2 weeks when everybody has been off of school and my wife had a chance to work sometimes from home or be off on vacation days. And I work from home. This is my office. So for me to be actually trying to do any of my work in the office while everybody's at home trying to do other things, it was maddening. It was one of the most stressful environments that I've been in for a long time. It's much easier just to go on vacation, get out, so I'm not in my office. So it was a very interesting thing, and we had to make that work. So it was very, very evident in those particular 2 weeks. So one of the other things that I wanted to tell you about was, you know, I'm a poet. Many of you already know this. Many of you have read my book. If not, it's available. It's called Inspire. It's my poetic observations. I've been writing poetry since the age of 7. So on the show, I found it particularly interesting, since we're talking about what love means and what marriage means, to read out some of my poems. I apologize for those people that don't like poetry. Please kind of stick with it if you choose. But I'll read a few poems. One of the ones that I wanted to read, especially starting out, was once I left kind of the infatuation stage and you know, all through high school and before that, falling in and out of love as I deemed love at that moment. Then I met the person that was to become my wife. And that's when I really understood what true love meant. But it took a while to understand it. And as we're talking about this love and marriage, it's not just love now, but it's when you're falling in love and realizing now, you know, many years later, what made you fall in love and how did it happen for you. For me, I knew there was something in me that knew that this was the woman that I was going to marry. As a matter of fact, I told my best friend who asked me, who is this girl that you invited to your house? I told him flat out, this is the woman that I'm going to marry. He laughed it off. And then a year and a half later, you know, he was laughing as the best man at my wedding. It's how it is. I knew it. I had an inkling. I'm not sure if it's, you know, because of my spirituality and guidance and me being in a channeled state often that I just knew that. But out of that, even though I knew that this was the woman I was going to marry, I still knew not enough about her. I didn't really know whether I was in love or not. I didn't know whether she was the one. I just had that feeling. And then I found myself, this was before we were dating, I found myself starting to write a poem. And what I realized very quickly throughout is that it's not really me that's writing this poem. It's my wife or my future wife is writing this poem to me. All I'm doing is taking dictation. It was a very interesting, surreal experience as I'm writing this down, thinking, where is this coming from? And what does this mean? Oh, wait a minute. This is from her to me. How is that possible? So I'm writing all of this. And here is the poem that I wrote to my bride-to-be. This was written on January 30th, 1998, before we started dating. We started dating February 17th, 1998. So this is me writing that poem. Okay? Your eyes look deep inside of me, as if to say, why can't you see? I need you near, so have no fear and kiss me. Let me feel your touch. I have been yearning it so much. Don't be afraid. Don't think. Don't wait. Just kiss me. Listen to that voice inside that tells you there's no choice. There's nothing you and I can do. You are for me. I am for you. Please kiss me. Isn't that the truth? Do you not feel that what's between us is for real? How can you doubt your own heart's sound? Your worries, nothing but a cloud. Oh, kiss me. And the skies will clear. You are the one my heart holds dear. Our paths are crossed forevermore. You are the one that I adore. God, kiss me. And let us celebrate that we have stumbled on our fate. Together we'll make dreams come true. You will for me, I will for you. Now kiss me. I wrote that poem. I actually even named it Before the Moment. It's in the book if you want to see it. But this is how I understood. I understood that something is going on. Something is happening there. It's not just me feeling that this is the woman that I'm about to marry, or that I was going to marry eventually, rather. But there is a lot more to it. And I started paying more attention to it. And then I invited her to our first date, and the rest is history. 14 years or 16 years from that moment, but 14 years married. Love and marriage is a process. It's a beautiful, beautiful part of life. We're going to take a short commercial break, and when we come back, it will be my honor to welcome Dr. Charles and Dr. Elizabeth Schmitz and ask them questions of what their research shows of what successful marriages look like. Please stay with us on School of Human Potential Radio.
Are you tired of all of the negativity in children's fiction? Does your child suffer from night terrors or frequent bad dreams? Do you wish there was a series for your child to read that is fun and inspirational? The Wishflower Field, Marie's Triumph, is a fanciful book that not only entertains, but builds inner strength. Join the many that have seen the difference this positive book has made in the way their children handle fear. The Wishflower Field is truly a series that appeals to all ages and empowers within. Visit thewishflowerfield.com for your copy today. That's thewishflowerfield.com.
Hi, I'm Alan Weisberg, founder of School of Human Potential. To help you determine if it is the right thing for you, I'd like to ask you a few simple questions. Do you consider yourself a hardworking, educated, well-informed individual? If so, do you ever find yourself in a situation that you wish you were better prepared for, such as holding your own in a conversation at an art museum or a concert hall? Managing stress? Parenting? Physical confrontation? Or in bed? Truth is, being a well-rounded individual who's prepared for life's many challenges is difficult in our day and age. We are much too busy working, raising families, and trying to carve out a few moments of peace, let alone worry about becoming self-actualized. We get it. The reason for starting the School of Human Potential was to help people like you become well-rounded and self-actualized without taking a lot of time or money. We found and filmed world-renowned experts and put their knowledge into easily accessible online courses spanning various topics of mind, body, and spirit. You can go at your own pace and access them on any device. By taking the courses, here are some of the benefits you can expect. You will broaden your horizons and deepen your understanding of the world and yourself. You will hold your own in a cultural conversation. You'll be able to protect yourself and your loved ones in a life-threatening situation. You'll find peace and meaning in your life. You'll become a better spouse, partner, and lover. You'll be fit, healthy, and financially secure. But if that's not enough, know that the majority of the courses at School of Human Potential are exclusive. You simply won't find them anywhere else. And here's the most amazing part. Outside of the School of Human Potential, you would expect to pay thousands of dollars for this information and spend countless hours learning it. However, when you enroll with us, you will pay less than $100 per course, and each one takes up to 8 hours. To start, go to www.schoolhp.com. Our hope is that you allow us to take you on a journey leading to a new and improved you. Here's to you reaching your full potential. And welcome back to School of Human Potential Radio. I'm your host, Alan Weisberg, and it is my distinct pleasure to welcome America's number one love and marriage experts and award-winning authors, Dr. Charles and Dr. Elizabeth Schmitz. Welcome to the program, doctors.
Thank you. Welcome, welcome into our home and our studio. We're glad to be here.
Well, thank you very much. From my home to yours, it's a pleasure. I love the world of internet and the abilities it allows us to do.
Isn't that terrific?
Yeah. So, again, you have an extensive amount of work that you have done. Not only have you been married for 46 years, maybe more by now, but you have written lots of books. As a matter of fact, I think your new book just came out, if I'm not mistaken. It's Building a Love That Lasts, The 7 Surprising Secrets of Successful Marriages. But you've been doing lots of speeches and lots of seminars, and basically your work has been on all continents working with people and deciding or trying to understand what makes a marriage successful. Is that correct?
That's absolutely correct. And by the way, our fourth book has just been released. It's called How to Marry the Right Guy.
And, oh, perfect.
So we're hoping it will do well. We started this out, I don't know how much detail you want, but we started this out about 32 years ago. Mm-hmm. I had a doctoral student when I was a professor at a major university who came to me and said, he always called me Doc, he said, can you do a workshop for me because I have another one in Kansas City? And I said, okay, what's the nature of the workshop? He said, successful marriage. And I said, who's the audience? He said, the Missouri young farmers and their wives. And I thought, that's an interesting group to speak to. So I said, sure, we'll do it. So I went home that night, and like you would expect, Liz and I started sitting around over a cup of coffee trying to take stock of our own marriage and the experiences that we had had over the years with people and marriages and the like. And it dawned on us during that conversation that of the 14 couples that would hang around together, go to football games, explore caves, go to the Lake of the Ozarks and boat and all that sort of stuff while we were in undergrad and grad school, that on the occasion of our 16th wedding anniversary, we were the only couple of the 14 that was still married.
Wow.
And that was an amazing revelation to us. You know, we had to kind of check our figures to make sure that that was right. And so, you know, it's like that famous Yankee player born and raised in St. Louis used to say, when you come to the fork in the road, Yogi Berra, take
yeah,
it.
Yeah, take it.
And so we had a choice. We could explore why people got divorced and separated, in other words, why marriage failed, or we could go the other path and say, what does a great marriage look like? What does it look like? And can you learn from great marriages, and can you emulate, and can you model, and the like? And so we started a journey that has now taken us to all 50 states of the Union, 48 countries, and all 7 continents of the world. And yes, we did go to Antarctica last January.
And interview scientists.
We interviewed scientists, Nat Geo specialists, personnel on the ship, military people, and the like, really focusing on long separations and the like. You can imagine being on that Russian ship right now that's frozen in the ice down there. That would not be a very pleasant experience, I can assure you. But anyway, so we started on this journey. We've been doing it for 32 years. We've written 4 books, and they're sort of in a sequence. The first one was really exploring what does great marriage look like on all the world's continents. And what we found was great similarities. In fact, we came up with what we call 7 pervasive characteristics of successful marriages, whether you're in St. Louis, Missouri, or Beijing, China, or New York City, or Rio de Janeiro, it doesn't matter. They look very, very much alike. So we wrote the book Golden Anniversaries, and it was really the aspiration book of, yes, if you marry right and if you do the right things, you can make it to your golden anniversary. Liz and I are 3 years short of that. We're at 47 and counting. Then the second book, the one important lesson we kept learning over and over from these people was that in a marriage, in a relationship, simple things matter. That doing simple things day in and day out, simple acts of kindness, simple showings of respect, simple, you know, you come home one night or your spouse comes home one night and you got dinner ready for them. You know, just simple acts of kindness. Flowers that come more frequently than just on Valentine's Day. Simple things, watching a sunset, sharing a bottle of wine out on the deck. That sort of thing. And so we wrote about that. Simple things matter. And the notion of the whole book was very simple. A successful marriage is an accumulation of having done the simple things. Mm-hmm. Having done the simple things. Then the third book in the sequence was Building a Love That Lasts, which was an extension of Golden Anniversaries that really, again, addressed what additional things have we learned about what makes successful marriage work around the world. And then our fourth book, we took It was really based upon a question one time that our New York agent asked us. He said, well, but what kind of advice do you give to people, particularly women, on how to marry the right guy? And that was an intriguing question to us because we had heard lots of advice around the world, and we would ask them, you know, what are the things you look for? What do you have to be careful of? And in a nutshell, the motivation for this book came down to a simple notion. People say, what's the number one predictor of a successful marriage? And the answer is, marry the right person in the first place. And mm-hmm. people look at us sort of, well, yeah, but how do you know that? And we mm-hmm. say, we think we know what that is. And we've learned about it over 32 years on all the continents of the world. How to marry the right guy is full of some really, really important lessons that we have learned. And if people are interested in a relationship, wanting to make it work for a lifetime, if they will simply ask these 33 questions, and then, of course, as you would guess, like the marriage quiz, we have a score that puts you into the acceptable or unacceptable range. Mm-hmm. And so that's sort of where we are. It's been a sequence that spanned 32 years, our 47 years of marriage, and all the people that we've met along the way. It's been what we call our journey, our labor of love.
Wow. Well, it certainly has been. And I find it interesting that you started your labor of love right basically where I am after 14 years of marriage. So interesting. I find some parallels there. Now, how to marry the right guy. Initially, I was going to mention that I don't want my wife reading it. But speaking of the 33 questions, and I did take the quiz. You've mentioned the marriage quiz on your website. I did take it. It's 20 questions. I got all 20 correct, although I was teetering on one of the questions, whether it was true or false. All the questions are true or false. So I feel great about myself. But 33 questions on how to find the right guy or how to marry the right guy. Give us some of those questions and how people can tell.
Oh, let me tell you, it's really easy when you listen to the questions. Let me give you some examples.
Please.
I am physically and emotionally in a healthy state most of the time.
Mm-hmm.
Basically, it's like there's a psychologist who we absolutely love, Murray Banks, and he talks about being psychologically healthy and ready for love and ready for a relationship. Until you're in that state most of the time, you can't contribute to a good relationship. So even if you find the right guy, you're not ready for love if you're not in a good psychological place and you know your wants and needs and you understand them. Another question is, my beliefs and core values are compatible with his. Big issue that people forget to talk about. What do you really believe in? Are your real core values the same? Because the core values, what really matters to you, has to matter to him or the relationship won't work. And my favorite is, my best friend is someone other than the guy I love. If that's true, we got the wrong guy.
Right.
Because these great relationships that we have had the privilege, and I mean privilege, of interviewing these great couples around the world, there is one fact that holds true in every single one of these. Their best friend is their spouse. They trust them with their life, with their liberty, with their money, with their deepest secrets. They trust them with everything.
And I have to tell you I guess it's funny if it weren't so sad. We were in Rio de Janeiro, and we were taken by a driver that we had hired to a high-rise condominium in the wealthy part of town because we were told this was the couple of Rio de Janeiro.
The best couple.
Oh, he was a big MD. She was a socialite. You know, this was the couple, and everybody modeled after this couple. Well, we get up to take their private elevator, get up there, and we start the interview. And one of the questions, a third of the way through our protocol, is, who is your best friend? She named 10 people and never mentioned her husband.
Hmm.
He mentioned at least 10 people. There's Joe and there's Felix and there's blah, 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 and never mentioned his wife. Well, our driver across the way, she was in the room to help with some of the translation issues, and she started making these faces, and we gave her the nonverbal, don't show any feeling or emotion or anything like that. But it was obvious to the driver that these people weren't really in love. They didn't really care all that much for each other. They had stayed together for 37 years as a matter of convenience.
Right.
It was great. She was the socialite. He was the great MD. She took care of the household and the kids while he played golf. And that was the kind of relationship that they had. The other telling question is one we learned in Halifax, Nova Scotia, where it really drove home one time. We were interviewing a couple. He had been a former Royal Canadian Mounted Police. And we asked that question, Joe, we'll just make up his name here. Joe, can you imagine life without Susie? And he thought about it for a while, and he said, yeah, I think I could. Well, let me tell you something. On the people that we have interviewed in all these great marriages around the world, and great marriages are measured not just by longevity, but they're mm-hmm. measured by happiness and success that we have learned through our research with the interview protocol that we use. And he said, I think I could. I think I could live without her. And that is the wrong answer, because couple after couple after couple, thousands of people in successful marriages around the world, when you ask them, can you live without your spouse? The reactions are always the same. You see misting in the eyes. You see them start reaching for each other and touching each other and patting each other, rubbing each other's knee, because you've asked them a question that they don't want to confront, that they don't want to have to deal with. But, you know, as the saying goes, until death do us part. And it's a very, for people who are madly in love and in these wonderful long-term marriages, the thought of losing their spouse is unimaginable. And they cannot imagine living without them. So these are, you know, some of the real important clues that we've learned over the years when we deal with all these married couples.
Yeah, and I think, again, the left brain really starts playing games, because people who are used to dealing with problems and the problem solvers, you ask them a question like that and they look at it from the left brain perspective of, can you imagine your life without the other? Well, yes. And if something were to happen, I know that I would be okay and I'd be able to get through it. But that's not the question at the heart center. When you're asking the question of people who are in love, you know, who's their best friend? There's only one answer.
That's exactly right. And, you know, it's so emphatic when these couples that really have this deep, unabiding love for each other, that just absolutely can't think about anything except being with the one they love, and they answer the question, they don't hesitate. They don't even give it a second thought. That left brain doesn't click in. It mm-hmm. is all from the heart, because these couples have connected in that manner.
No, it's absolutely true. And I really like when you were speaking, Elizabeth, when, you know, going through some of the questions of how to marry the right guy. It's not just only about the right guy. It really is about you. Are you ready for the right guy? So a lot of these are both-sided questions, because there is timing issue. And you really have to understand who you are before you can be in love with the other person. I always tell my clients that until you love yourself, you cannot love somebody else honestly, because then it would not be a fair relationship. It would be a relationship where you're depending on the other person, and it's not a apples to apples comparison. So it's very important, and I like that you have those questions in there.
You're absolutely right, and the whole first section of our book is the right you, because if that doesn't come first, if you do not get your act together, and if you're not ready to accept the love on an equal basis and a firm foundation, it's not going to develop and it's never going to last.
Yeah. It was also interesting. Again, I came from the former Soviet Union. I spent 14 years there, and then I moved to the United States at that time. And I see a lot of the culture aspects that I at least grew up with were much more on the masculine side. You know, the man of the house, he is the provider. The woman of the house stays and she does the chores around the house, raises the children. The man controls everything. In the United States, it's, or at least at this time that I've seen, it's leaning much more in the equality, which I would agree with, and I think that that's a better way to go. My wife certainly was instrumental in helping me come to that point where both of us were fully involved and it was not just a one or the other. But in being on all those seven continents, what are the trends that you're finding Are people going more towards the equality aspect that I'm seeing here, or are we still more in the masculine-driven society?
Great question, because that's one of the questions, obviously, because we both have our doctorates, we have a very equal-standing marriage, and we have always believed in that. Mm-hmm. And we found that true of these great couples in the United States, and we started to branch out into foreign countries. We were really pretty convinced that that would not hold true. And the amazing part of it is, it does hold true. These couples that have these absolutely great relationships have an equality in respect, an equality in how they make decisions and how they live their lives together as partners. Now, granted, we went to countries of, we started out in the Judeo-Christian religion and faith issues, and we moved into other religions, and some of the other religions where the man is really dominant in the religion itself. Interestingly enough, when you get past the outside world and the outside influences and you get into the home, when you have a really great marriage and relationship, you see more of the equality. And one of the funniest ones was in Morocco, where a couple in Tangiers told us, oh, yeah, we look good on the outside. I run everything out here. But when we get into the house, my wife owns the house.
Good.
She
good.
Tells me what to do.
It was so funny, too, as he talked about his daughters and his wife and their relationships. And I mean, you could be standing in any American home in America, listening to this conversation about it. Oh, how they go shopping too much, or they spend too much, or they do too much of this. Or you know, it was so funny because the conversation was so similar, and you never would have assumed that that was the case with this Muslim couple. And it was very, very interesting.
And very heartwarming, because at the root of all great marriages, when they really have a terrific marriage that goes on a 9 or a 10 on our 10-point scale, they have this unbelievable chemistry and respect for each other that underlies everything. And it doesn't matter where it is or how long they're separated or what they do with their relationship, whether it's a commuter marriage or it's a marriage where they're together, or whether it's an old-time marriage where the wife stayed home and doesn't work, or whether they both work.
One Pakistani couple, the husband said to us, or said to Liz one day during an interview, he said, you know, my family arranged our marriage, but I really love my wife. I really love my wife, you know. And then he talked about how they had grown together and how the parents were so helpful in helping pick just the right person, you know, and so forth and so on. So I guess the notion would be, even in arranged marriages, if you do the right things, you can learn to love each other as much as if you made that choice yourself. So some of the cultural differences on the surface may seem like they throw up a roadblock, or it might make the whole thing different. But in the reality, whether it's a Muslim couple or a Hindu couple or a couple in Africa, or a couple in China, wherever, if their marriage works, it works for the same reasons. And that's
what we found fascinating.
The big discovery that we've made in the past 3-plus decades.
And you just answered the question I was about to ask, because I have on my piece of paper right now asking a question about the couples from India, because I've worked with many people, and I've worked with people for prearranged marriages, and that struck me at that time as something that was completely different, because here you fall in love, then you decide if you want to marry that person, you marry that person, and there are different you know processes that people go through, living together or not. There it's your parents fix you. And then how do you determine whether you're in love or not? And is it okay? And there, the divorce rates are much lower because of their cultural standards. So that was fascinating to me. I'm glad you just answered that question.
Well, it was fascinating to us, you can tell, because of our world travels and our search. I mean, in essence, for the past 32 years, we've been in search of these great marriages around the world. And we've been absolutely taken with the similarities of cultures when you get past the front door and get rid of all the garbage that goes into what is expected of them. When you actually boil it down, it's the relationship between the husband and wife that makes all the difference in the world. It trumps everything else.
And the best advice that we ever got in our professional careers when it comes to research is the following. Don Clifton was a longtime owner and CEO of the world-renowned Gallup organization. Mm-hmm. They have offices in 27 countries of the world. They do lots of research. But they also do a lot of people selection, and that's what they enjoy doing a lot more than the product research. And Don said to us one time, he said, look, you really have a choice here in life. And it comes to marriage, you can do the following. You can study failed marriages and then see if you can apply what you learned from failed marriages to successful ones. Or you can study successful marriages and see what they're like. And he said, you don't learn much about failed marriages or about successful marriages by studying failed ones.
That's true.
You learn about successful marriages by studying successful marriages. And that was profoundly impactful on us because it really says, find great marriages, discover what makes them work, learn the lessons of those great marriages, and you if you apply them to your own marriage, you can make it work, irrespective of whether in the beginning you chose your spouse or your family chose your spouse for you.
That's very true. Another question I wanted to ask you, and I'm not sure if you watched the show, it would be interesting if you did, House of Cards. Are you familiar with it?
I'm not, no.
It's a show that finished its first season. The second season is beginning in February. It's Kevin Spacey, and it's on Netflix. It's a Netflix-owned show. And what it's about, yeah, it's a... Go ahead.
I said I love Kevin Spacey.
Oh, he's an incredible actor. I really enjoy his work. And this one, I think he's also doing such a fabulous job, and because he plays a ruthless politician who is married to a wife who is just as ruthless, and he's trying to make it through the kind of through the political landscape and get what he wants. And he wanted to be a vice president. He was promised a position of Secretary of State that was taken away, so he decides to take matters into his own hands and shakes everything up and plots and gets his revenge. The interesting part of it, among the all the other areas, was the marriage, because his marriage to his wife, who is played by Robin Wright, Robin Wright Penn, to give the full name, is they have an open marriage. So if he chooses to sleep with somebody for specific political reasons, then his wife understands that, and they discuss that, and they're okay with it. The question is, what does it get us? Same thing from her. If she needs something and there's a person that can provide it, and the physical relationship needs to be because of that, then she goes that way. And they have this incredible dynamic of people who are very high-power political people who truly, deeply love each other and choose to be with each other for more than just the status reasons. It was a very interesting dynamic to kind of look at because, you know, when we speak about open marriages, you have a... I'm not sure if that was a part of your research, but you have a completely different dynamic. Here, it's a political relationship that is also an open marriage, but they really actually do love each other. I found that fascinating.
We would find it fascinating also because our research indicates that a number one killer of a marriage, absolute guaranteed killer, is infidelity. Mm-hmm. Because
sure.
At the heart of all great marriages is trust, unabiding
exactly.
trust.
Mm-hmm.
What you're saying in this example is that there's the trust there because they're going to talk about why they slept with the other person. I don't know that we would call that a marriage per se,
right.
As more of an arrangement.
Not sure we'd call it love either. And I guess I'd have to be blunt here. And
sure.
I have been known to be that way from time to time. It's my German origins, I think.
Uh-huh.
But, you know, we've penned several articles over the years about the Hollywood version of love and
of
that
course,
sort
yeah.
of thing. And the truth of the matter is Hollywood, for the most part, with movies like that, really doesn't get it right. It's not the reality that you face in the everyday life of most human beings who are married.
Mm-hmm.
And so, you know, that's not to say that there aren't exceptions are circumstances that, that allow this stuff to work. But I remember when we wrote this article based on a number of couples that had suffered the pains and slings and arrows of infidelity. And we posted it on one of the many blogs that we post on. And we got some of the most angry people in the world who said, multiple love with multiple people is okay. There's nothing wrong with it. And on and on and on. And that may be fine. That may work for them. But the truth is, it doesn't work for the vast, overwhelming majority of human beings. Because what's so important to someone who loves someone truly and deeply is they trust them. They trust them. And when you violate the trust, you violated the relationship. And you can pretend that you can make your way through it, that everything will be hunky-dory in the end, but it isn't. You know, somebody cheats on their husband or vice versa, and they said they'd be home at 9, and they're not home by 10.
Exactly.
What do you think is going through their mind?
Yep.
It's a basic trust issue, and once it's violated, it's very, very difficult to get back, irrespective of what some of these divorce lawyers or psychologists like to tell you. Oh, we can fix it. We can help them through infidelity. The truth of the matter is it rarely ever works. And if they tell you it works a high percentage of time, they're lying to you.
Yeah, sorry,
Elizabeth, go ahead.
Don't go back to the same.
Yeah, it's from my perspective, it's looking at either hypotheticals and what humans will be like sometime in the future. When we're talking about these relationships and open relationship, open marriages, it does work for some people, I'm sure. But it's like the idea of capitalism or idea of communism or idea of open marriages. It relies on people acting a certain way, and people don't act that way. So in your research, as it shows, and I agree with that, that for most people, it just doesn't work.
Yeah,
that was put well.
Yeah, and I think that the idea behind, the motivation behind why I would be direct about that is that I think as people are maturing and growing up, and you know, young people in particular, they have so many role models now, and as you mentioned earlier, not all of them are good.
Mm-hmm.
And then when you add the social media and the impact that has on the way kids think about this stuff and how they begin to develop their values and their belief systems and the like, when it's the constant spewing of stuff that is, you know, we wrote one recently by saying it's normal doesn't make it normal.
Exactly.
You know, that a normal curve, you've seen it, you probably studied in college like most of us do in math or statistics or research design. A normal curve is a distribution of where people fall on this continuum in terms of their beliefs. And the truth is, about two-thirds of people fall about in the middle of that curve.
Mm-hmm.
And so there are extremes on the left end and the pinches on the right. And those people cannot be described in a general sense as being normal. It's outside of the normal range. So saying it's normal doesn't make it normal. And that's the thing, the lesson that we worry about with our own grandchildren, with young couples that come to us for advice, about people that write on the Internet, and many of them write stuff that just simply isn't scientifically based. We wrote a one recently, What's an Expert? You know,
right.
And because there are so many people out there writing this junk that don't know anything about it, haven't done the research, haven't done the homework. And
give people a lot of misconceptions and a lot of just plain false information that is going to hurt their relationships if they listen to it.
Well, yeah, but I completely agree with what you're saying. The Internet has incredible things with it, and you know, with it comes a price of not knowing where that information is coming from or what the intentions were. But one thing I think everybody can agree with, and based on your research, you have to trust yourself. And you have to trust yourself. You have to take that information through your own filter, and you have to ask the questions of, where is this guiding me to? Does it feel right? Does it resonate? Or is this just something that I want to hear, and it's not the actual truth? So I'm happy you're putting it out there. You have it on your blogs, and you have something that's backed up by years and years of research.
One of my favorites, I really think this is important. You hear so many people will blog and write and public presentations about, oh, you don't really need to go through life with somebody. You know, it's okay. You can do it alone. And they think that until they're 60 or 70 years old.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and going through life and ending at the end of time being alone is a terrible, terrible place to be. We've talked to older people over and over and over about this thing. Getting to the end of days by yourself is not fun. Who advocates for you in the hospital bed? Who takes care of you? You know, everybody needs somebody. We really believe that. It's not just a song verse, but it's the truth. And particularly as you grow older and as you age, then you begin to realize how important it is to have one or more significant others in your life that you can depend on, that are on the journey of life with you and will be there at the end of days.
And there is great research to show the benefits of marriage, in other words, having that partner in the fact, I mean, just one fact, if you don't use anything else, is men live on average 10 years longer and women 4 years longer if they are in a relationship.
Oh, that's perfect. Well, I'm sure I'll use that research once again with discussion of somebody.
There are health benefits to having a person in your life, you know,
want to help people get it right.
We want to help people get it right, irrespective of their orientation. Mm-hmm. Our first book was, in fact, endorsed by the national head of the Gay, Lesbian, and Transgender Association because he said these relationships apply in the gay community as well. This isn't about us and them, about, only looking at one perspective. It's really saying if you want to build a relationship with someone, if you want to have someone love you and you love them in return, then there's stuff that you've got to do. There's work that you have to do to make that work. And this stuff has pretty general applicability around the world, across cultures and continents.
Well, I completely agree, and I've come from two different parts of the world, and I can tell you it applies to both places. So I agree completely. Thank you.
We have a dream, by the way, of going to St. Petersburg.
Right now, St. Petersburg would probably be warmer than it is in Chicago and have less snow, I would imagine.
We're going to try to get there in Helsinki and maybe Berlin and make that kind of trip someday in the next year or two. So
it was beautiful, and there are great cruises available. We just came back from one last year where it was a Baltic cruise that originated in Copenhagen and then went all around. So went to Berlin, went to Helsinki, went to St. Petersburg, went to Stockholm, and then came back. So you can catch Norway on the way. Highly recommend those, and you'll get a chance to really stop by and see some interesting places.
Yeah, we took a train basically through those countries a number of years ago, through Germany and Denmark and Sweden and all that sort of
Norway.
Stuff. Norway. And it's lovely, beautiful country there.
And the cruise sounds fabulous.
You might have been on the same cruise as a friend of ours from St. Louis. John Hilton and his wife took that same cruise that you just mentioned. So they loved it, by the way.
Could very well be. Absolutely. We enjoyed it. It's been such a pleasure having you on. I know I can ask you many more questions, but you have to go. You have another radio interview shortly. Where can people find you if they want to get more information and get your books?
Amazon.com for Building Love at Last or How to Marry the Right Guy. And our website is real easy, simplethingsmatter.com.
One word, simplethingsmatter.com. Oh,
just like in life and in marriage, it's the simple things that matter. Thank you so much for being on. I really appreciate it.
Have a great day.
Have a great day.
Thank you as well, and a happy new year. And for everybody who is staying with us, please hang on. We'll take a short commercial break. When we come back, we'll continue our discussion. By the way, the phone lines are open, so if you'd like to make a call, we can be reached at 888-429-5471. Please stay with us. Becoming a well-rounded person in our modern society is no easy task. Never mind finding your true purpose in the process. Thus, at School of Human Potential Radio, we invite world-renowned experts for a discussion on how to achieve both and lead a healthy, wealthy, and fulfilling life. Topics are all over the mind, body, and spirit spectrum, and guests range from Lisa Williams to Yakov Smirnoff and everyone in between. Listen live, call in, and allow us to help you reach your full potential.
If you need help getting free from your past in order to clearly see the present so you can set your course and live your essence, I've got great news for you. Radio talk show host, author, inspirational speaker, and life purpose coach Alan Vaisberg is waiting to help you recalibrate your life. At recalibrateyourlife.com, you'll find the 5 simple steps Alan will lead you through to help you reach the place in life that has been eluding you. Restore, renew, and recalibrate today at recalibrateyourlife.com.
And welcome back to School of Human Potential Radio. I'm your host, Alan Vaisberg. Thank you for staying with us. What an interesting discussion that we just had with Dr. Charles and Dr. Elizabeth Schmitz, America's number one love and marriage experts. I find it fascinating. All of that research is showing us very simple truths, is that love is love. You have to work at it. You have to be with the right person, and you have to treat them like they are the right person. So very, very interesting. I'm certainly looking forward to reading the book, and I will, you know, obviously go and show my wife how to marry the right guy, just to show that she did indeed marry the right one, since we took the quiz, and I feel very safe with that. Anyway, I did want to talk about a couple of things. Now, a lot of our audience is very spiritual in nature. A lot of our audience has read, you know, different books. For instance, Conversation with God by Neil Donald Walsh. When I was reading that particular book, it was a number of years ago, and it made me think about again relationships and marriages. The ideas, some of the ideas there, are a little bit more on the open scale, saying that it's, you know, the definition of marriage as we have it right now is not necessarily the best definition. I'm paraphrasing, and if I'm saying things incorrectly, please correct me, but that was my impression reading it at that time. And people can indeed love more than one person. And it really made me think, because again, going through my infatuation phase, as I call it, growing up from 13, going through high school and college before I actually met my wife, and falling in and out of love, that was the question that I was asking myself often. Can you love many people? And how will that work? Reading that book only made me question that more. After 14 years of marriage, I can tell you that, is it possible for other people? Perhaps. And I'm certainly not knocking anybody, anybody's perspectives and what works for them in their marriage, because I have certainly read and spoke to people for whom open marriages and other things work, or who don't have marriages in the way that we describe it, who are more communal in a way. There are all sorts, and that's the beautiful thing about life, that there are many different ways to experience life. And for those people that choose to be alone, and for those people that choose to be with many, this is their way. And there are lessons that they're learning, so God bless them and enjoy the journey. But I probably would agree with the research that it doesn't work for most of the people because of the way that we are at our conscious level, if you will. Because we are brought up in a society that talks about certain values. Now, for those people, and I read an interesting article about a very small country outside of China where their relationships are very different. They are driven by females. The marriages, I don't think they have marriages at all. They're driven by the females. They're communal. females are choosing the males that they want to be with. So it's a very different society because they grew up with that and it works for them, and that's perfect. I think for us overall, based on what I've seen and experienced on at least 2 continents, I'm not going to say 7 because I haven't been everywhere and done the research that the doctors have done over such a long time, that I probably, again, would agree that for most people, the more standard idea of marriage, meaning not the open, loving one person and focusing on loving that one person is what matters. So, in my personal experience, I love my wife. I'm not interested in loving anybody else, and it works for me. But interesting things to discuss and talk about and see how other people are doing it. What I wanted to do in the remaining time, since we have a few more minutes and I promised I was going to read a second poem, is I wanted to read a second poem. Now, going back to the spirituality aspect and being in the channeled state, for those people that are not familiar with the channeled state, it's really more of a meditative state where you're connecting to your inner voice, if you will, and we can go into, you know, more specific ways of describing it. But in essence, it's you getting your guidance, whether it's from yourself, from God, or whatever you choose to call it. But it's a channeled state in which you're receiving that answer. In 1998, you know, after I started dating my wife currently, and 7 months have passed, because this poem was written on 8/6/1998, whereas the previous one was January 30th. I wrote this poem, and I was in that channeled state. A lot of the times, again, when I write, I'm in the channeled state. I'm receiving communication from, you know, somewhere, guidance. And there was a question about, you know, love and how I can describe the feeling of love, how I can put it on a piece of paper, which is a very difficult thing to do. And I started getting, you know, information. And I started getting information. I wrote it down, and this is what it was. So this is also in my book, by the way. It's called My Guardian's Answer. The words you seek are non-existent. They haven't been invented yet. There's nothing to describe the instance for when you know that this is it. There aren't expressions or wise sayings that come quite close to show the truth, because you feel that you're just playing with suits that fit a size too loose. You feel the burden on your shoulders, you're trying to shrug off the weight, but of no use, because these boulders aren't something that you can relate. You are a victim of your passion, you are a mute who cannot write. And even though you're in confession, there's nobody to hear your plight. I understand. Please do not worry. You have begun to realize there is no need for you to hurry, because the truth knows no demise. And what your heart is trying to whisper, she hears quite well. Don't be alarmed. Your eyes say more than you can muster. Affections being in your arms. The words you seek are non-existent. They haven't been invented. Still, they never should describe the instance. For that one, it's for both of you to feel. That was the answer that I received from my guidance, from my guardian angels, or whoever was communicating to me at that time. I know that you know, we speak about love, everybody has their own ideas, but I think love overall is something that we can agree on is a beautiful state, and a state that we should try to reside in as much as possible in our world that's pulling us in every possible direction, in our world full of stress, full of things that we need to do, full of ambitions and societal factors. Love is the one thing that can guide us through all of that. So focus on love. Whether you're in marriage, whether you're dating, you're single, doesn't matter. Love is love, and that is what I wish for you. Happy New Year to everyone. God bless you, and come back with us next Wednesday when we have more conversations at School of Human Potential Radio.
Thank you once again for listening to School of Human Potential Radio. We hope you enjoyed the program and are inspired to make a positive change in your life. For more information about the school, please like our Facebook page and visit www.schoolhp.com. To sign up for a session with Alan, please visit www.recalibrateyourlife.com or call 1-800-323-1619.